The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Hello and welcome into ESPN FC. I'm Kay Murray, and later on in the show I will be joined by Sid Lowe and Jules Laurent as we take a look at the latest goings on in the Messi to PSG saga. But right now I'm joined by Shaka Hislop and Nedim Anua as we take a look at the latest news about Romelu Lukaku. Chelsea are close to be agreeing a £97.5 million deal to re-sign the player. He left the club in 2014. It's expected to be a five-year deal. And as you can see by the stats here, it is in the last two seasons with Italy where he really has become a top star in world football. Chelsea very eager to sign him. And the player is said to have made it clear that he would like to move there if an acceptable offer has been made. And that does seem to be the case. And so there is lots to talk about right now. Nedim, how much better does Lukaku up top make Chelsea?
Yeah, I think that makes them a huge threat. I think last year, for as good as they were, it felt like with Timo Werner in there and whoever else would be playing that sort of position, they could create some chances, but they weren't really as clinical as, say, perhaps the manager would have liked, because there were quite a few games I felt which maybe they could have capitalised on an early chance and controlled it in a different manner. But in someone like Lukaku, to be completely honest with you, as somebody who supports Man City, that's the type of signing which sort of puts you on the back foot just a little bit. And even looking at the statistics there, I think in that 2018-19 season where he only scored 15, he was actually second top scorer for Man United, I believe. So let's not necessarily look at that in isolation. And he is somebody, as I say, he scores a ton of goals. And I think coming back to England, if it does happen, will be coming back with a lot of confidence, because now he's coming back as a champion. And he's going back to Chelsea, not as the youngster who's coming through their academy or anything like that. He's coming as a proven striker, one of the most expensive strikers in history. And I think he'll probably play up to that standard.
And it's a good point, Nedim, make, Shaka. Do you think that coming back to the league, he feels as though he has unfinished business at Stamford Bridge and maybe in the Premier League in general?
I think with the league, more so than just at Stamford Bridge. He was a young man when he left Chelsea, first time of asking. I thought he excelled at Everton, and then that big move to Manchester United just didn't work out for him. And you saw Lukaku rediscover that form, not rediscover the form of a striker, rediscover his confidence, though I never really thought that he lost much of that. But most importantly, in the last 12 months, the one big criticism we've had of Lukaku previous is that he simply wasn't a clean enough, clinical enough finisher. The last 12 months, I think he addressed that. He came into his own in that regard. And now, coming back to maybe kind of deal with, exercise some of those ghosts of that failed spell at Manchester United, it couldn't be a better time for him. It couldn't be a better club for him, given how Chelsea have played under Thomas Tuchel.
Do you think he is right to go there now, Nedim? Do you think this is the right move for him?
I think it's tough to say. You don't really know how happy he is, but I think he's somebody who can perform very, very well in the Premier League. I think his style of play, his understanding of the league, his understanding of Chelsea as a football club. And, you know, he'd be going to a place whereby they've just won a Champions League, so they're clearly on the up with the new manager, with a style that works. So, you know, I think from a sort of perspective of supporting Lukaku, I think that could be a great move in this moment. But, you know, we'll have to see, because you've still got many, many years to go. And on a goal, so, you know, like I say, I think when you look at it now, maybe it's a good time if Chelsea do have the money based on, say, some of the financial fair play softening the rules this summer. Perhaps it's a great time, and maybe the opportunity won't be there next year. So I guess if the stars align, this should probably make it happen.
Now, the stars seem to be aligning more here at the moment, Shaka, just with everything we're seeing today. With Chelsea and Lukaku, the Man City and Harry Kane, they seem to be one step closer to their goal scorer that they've gone out for in the market. Does it give them any edge if they do get Lukaku and City don't get Kane?
Without question. Listen, I think Lukaku comes in and quite easily gives Chelsea 25 goals this season, given their lack of scoring from their front man in Timo Werner last season. That pushes them a whole lot closer to the three clubs that got the better of them last season. And let's keep in mind that half of that season was under Frank Lampard and how good Chelsea actually were under Thomas Tuchel. I think Lukaku gives them a couple of options as well. We know that he can play as a front man all on his own. We saw that in his previous spell at Chelsea. We saw that at Everton. And then you saw him play as one of a front two with Inter Milan, where I thought he was outstanding for the last couple of seasons. So it also gives Thomas Tuchel a lot of options in terms of how he addresses, how he lines up, and what personnel he's able to call on. I felt all along that as long as Chelsea got a front man, the only club better than them that go into the season probably in better shape is Manchester City. A player of Lukaku's quality puts a little gap in between, or bigger gap between them and Manchester United and Liverpool, closes the gap somewhat on City while they still wait on the arrival of Harry Kane. This is a good signing.
Yeah, well, we obviously saw City in action in the Community Shield today against Leicester. They lost 1-0 to Leicester. It was a penalty deciding this one by a former City player in Kelechi Iheanacho very late on in this game as well. Okay, Nadim, I'm going to put this to you. No goals for Man City in this one, and I know you can't read too much into the Community Shield, but no goals in the Champions League final either. What does that tell you?
Yeah, I'm not going to read into it. I'm not going to read into it too much. I think even when you look at the Man City team, I think that's the best side that was available right now based on fitness and things like that. But ultimately, when you look at the lineup, you're probably thinking maybe five players or so might be in City's best 11 at this moment. And I think the Champions League final, it was a good few games ago for a lot of these people. I doubt that it's the first thing that's in their mind. Whereas for this game, as I say, you had people getting the chance like Cole Palmer, who's a good player, somebody who could have a big future for the club. But, you know, come the start of the season or maybe in a couple of weeks' time, you're going to be seeing people like Kevin De Bruyne in there. So ultimately, like I say, I wouldn't read too much into it for City. I think in some ways it's positive that it could still create chances with a sort of mixed team. But all the big players for Man City are still to come back in, and it's not just one or two. We're talking about Kevin De Bruyne's, talking about people like Raheem Sterling's and so on, Phil Foden's, even Gabriel Jesus's, people like that. So I wouldn't read too deeply into it. But if that's what you want to do, that's completely up to you, Kay. Write them off again.
It's ESPN FC.
Completely up to you.
It's ESPN FC. That's what we do best. Hey, talking about big players, Jack Grealish came on just past the hour mark in the Community Shield. His first game as a Manchester City player. Everybody got their first look at him. Did you take anything away from his performance? And what have you made of his signing, Nadim?
I can't really read too much into the performance. I think it was good to see him in the shirt, you know, something that people can get familiar with now. And he probably wanted to go out there and try and make a difference, but it just wasn't to be on this particular day. And I'm sure there's going to be plenty more from him going forward. Like, he's only trained a couple of days with the team. But I think it's potentially a very, very good signing. I think the fact that he's coming in as a high-quality player, but with somebody who's got a very, very high ceiling around him from this point forward could take him to a whole new level. And the point that I've been trying to make is that I don't think he's the best player at City right now, but based on what he's got right at this moment in time, he's got potential to become one of the best players for Man City. And I think having a look around and seeing that everything doesn't have to run through him anymore, I think it forces him to play in a slightly different manner. And I think if he adds the talent that he's got to that new sort of level of understanding, I think it's a great signing for City. I think it's going to be very tough to pick a team on a week-to-week basis. But ultimately, if you are successful in the last season, you shouldn't really expect to be able to win something going into the next if you just keep everything exactly the same. So I think it's a big boost, and he's one of the most exciting players in England. And I think it'll draw more eyes and bring a lot of excitement to the fans getting back in the stadium this season.
Yeah, undoubtedly. How much will it help him having Pep Guardiola as his manager, Nadim?
Yeah, it'd be huge. I think most people, whether they like Pep or not, they won't really disagree with the fact that he's been a very, very significant manager in recent history, arguably one of the best. And he's one of the best in terms of the fact that he makes most players, if not all the players that he's with, better. I think when you look back at someone like Raheem Sterling when he first came in, you know, Raheem was a good player, and then all of a sudden for 2-3 years he became a pivotal player for Man City, who at the time were winning everything, obviously barring the Champions League. So I think in Jack Grealish coming in, I think he'll raise his game. He'll make him understand the game in a totally different manner. And I've spoken to players who've played under Guardiola, and they say they almost have to relearn that he sees it so different to what they've been used to in the past. And I think for players like Grealish, who have a really high footballing IQ, I think it's a match made in heaven. So I don't think at this moment I could have picked a better manager for him to try and improve under.
So Grealish is in, Harry Kane. We don't yet know Xhaka, obviously. We continue to follow this transfer story. We know that Pep Guardiola wants them, but he said, as we reported yesterday, that the club have to negotiate Tottenham Hotspur. And so far, they're having some trouble in that aspect. How important is it for City to get Kane for the season ahead?
I think it's vital, and though City were missing a lot of players, as Nedim rightly pointed out, I think just by the way they play, you see how much a good number nine, a finisher like Harry Kane, will improve that. As good as City were, you just felt that that's the difference between them winning the Champions League and not, which continues to be their holy grail. Players of Kane's quality don't come along often. They improve any team they go into, even if that team is as good as Manchester City. If Man City do complete this signing, I expect it will go to the very last hours of the transfer window. If they do, I just don't see how anybody gets the better of them domestically. Europe is another question. That's a higher hurdle. But in terms of the Premier League, again, so that would make it, 4 and 5 years? I just don't see who gets the better of them.
So let's say then, Xhaka, you've got Lukaku going to Chelsea and Kane does go to City. Yeah, for you, it is absolutely title favourites for City.
Yes. Without question. The only thing that can unsettle City are themselves. And if they again go deep in the Champions League and somehow lose focus during that run, I know they didn't lose focus last season as they went to the final and still won the Premier League. But they are their biggest enemy in that regard. If they keep their focus on the league, if they avoid key injuries, which is out of their hands, I just don't see who gets the better of them. Even talking about a Chelsea side and certainly Thomas Tuchel, that beat Guardiola 3 times last season and have improved over the course of a season, I just don't see how they eclipse City.
What do you think about this, Nedim? Because obviously we saw Chelsea winning the Champions League last season. We saw good business from them last season. If Lukaku comes in, that's another summer of good business for them. Are Man City still favourites for you for the title despite that?
I'd have to say so. I think they've brought in Grealish this year and they've still got a player base, which is still exceptional. But I think Xhaka's kind of alluding to that. I think if City do manage to get what he's called a good number nine, then that sort of changes the dynamic just that little bit more, because last year City won it without having Sergio Aguero either playing or playing at his absolute best. And I think if they would have had that last year, then I think they probably would have won the league in a probably easier manner. So if they do manage to get that this season, I think one dimension which it adds, especially in someone like Kane, is the fact that they don't need to play well every single week, because I've experienced this myself. When sometimes you're out in the field and you just know that there's somebody who can take a chance or make something happen out of nothing. You know, City predominantly try and keep possession and control the game and things like this, but with people like Kane, it just takes a moment, and it was the same with Aguero as well. It just takes a moment. You know, not every one of those 260 goals Aguero scored came in games where City were dominating, but a lot of those goals were vitally important at times when City maybe were on the back foot. So I think if City do manage to address that, then it just matches up to in terms of what Chelsea have done, because Chelsea would be bringing in someone like Lukaku who can score something out of nothing and be really, really clinical. City do that as well, but they have the other pieces around it and the style of play and the understanding and the ability, as Xhaka says, to like be approaching a season knowing if they win it this year, then they've won the league 4 years out of five. You know, that level of confidence and understanding is something which is very, very hard to lose, and other teams, you know, can only wish to really have that.
Manchester City title favourites with both of these two on today's ESPN FC, and both will be joining me for extra time to answer your questions, so make sure you stick around for that, and make sure you always send your questions in if you would like to put them to our pundits.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. We continue to hear from Barcelona players on Lionel Messi's departure from the club. Frankie de Jong on Instagram saying as a child he watched all of his matches on television with his brother. When I arrived at Barcelona 2 years ago, I found out myself that you're a great person. It was a dream for me to play with the best player ever. I have loved every minute on the pitch. I will continue to enjoy your magic. But as it once started for me, it will be in front of the television. Thank you for everything, Leo. Sid Lowe and Jules Laurent joining me now to continue to talk about this story, which seems to be developing every day as well. What we do know, Sid, is that tomorrow there will be a press conference with Lionel Messi. What can we expect from it? Is it adios from him?
I think it is. I think Gian Laporta made that pretty clear in his press conference. It is true that Laporta did kind of leave that very, very tiny hint there that, you know, if something extraordinary happens, if there was suddenly some way back, if there was suddenly some way to deal with the financial situation, then maybe something could be done. But he said, we have to live in the real world. The reality is what it is, that Barcelona have no margin in terms of getting under the salary limits, that there's no way of keeping Messi. And in fact, it goes beyond Messi, by the way. It's not just Messi. They will have to still lose other players. And he said that all of these kind of ideas, for example, you know, someone coming in and buying a player at the last minute or some money coming in from somewhere, or even the idea of Messi playing for free, all of these are hypothetical situations that we can't really entertain. We have to live in the real world. And so he's going. And it just feels, obviously, look, it's very sad anyway, the departure of Lionel Messi, but I think the departure of him like this and for these kind of reasons is kind of unforgivable, really. It's unforgivable that the club was managed this badly to have reached this point. It was unforgivable that he reached the point that he reached last summer, unforgivable that he now reaches this point that it does this summer. And also, by the way, Kate, it's unforgivable to put me on the show with Jules so that Jules can sit there smiling and say, I've got Leo Messi, you haven't.
I know, but you can see a big smile from Jules. We had to endure it as well last night when he was on with us here on ESPN FC. But just to stick with it, Sid, how on earth did it get here? How did it get so bad that Barcelona are losing Lionel Messi?
Well, look, there are lots of things that have gone wrong, and we could be here literally all night going through these. But let's try and make it as basic as we possibly can. Put very simply, overspending for a long time. Overspending for a long time. Then, of course, the pandemic comes, and that's what pushes Barcelona over the edge. But, of course, the reason they could be pushed over the edge is because they were too close to it for too long. You look back, for example, and you see the departure of Neymar, and that was, I think, a big part of all of this. And it's curious, of course, that Neymar left and then tried to come back, and now he is playing with Messi, but because Messi has been forced to go as well. Barcelona, that should, at least in financial terms, have been good for them. But having that money in their pocket basically encouraged them to go out and spend even more. They spent 150 million euros on Dembélé, 160 million euros on Coutinho, 120 million euros on Antoine Griezmann. These are just the headline players, and there have been many, many more. And there have been many more that I think in some ways are more of a problem, because there have been many more slightly less talented players earning very, very large salaries. Then you had long-term footballers like Sergio Busquets, like Jordi Alba, like Sergio Roberto, like Gerard Piqué. And none of this, by the way, should be read as a criticism of these players directly, who were then on very, very large salaries. What happens when you get into an economic crisis that everybody knows about is that the one way out, of course, is to sell your players and to reduce your salary limits, to reduce the amount that you have to spend on salary. But Barcelona couldn't do that, partly because every other club knew that they were desperate. Laporta put it in very simple terms the other day. 110% of the money that comes into Barcelona at the moment goes out on salaries. That's unsustainable. Even with the departure of Messi, 95% of the money that comes in from everything, from all income and all areas of the club, is spent on salaries. That too is unsustainable, which is why, as I say, it's not just Messi. There will have to be other departures as well. So it's financial mismanagement, not from this current board of directors, from the previous board of directors, added to the specifics of the crisis that football faces at the moment with the pandemic, added to the specifics as well, by the way, of the fact that Lionel Messi was out of contract. Now, that's very, very, very important. Why? Because it means he was the one that's effectively the last in. Because, of course, had he signed for Barcelona, he'd have done so as a free agent. In other words, he's the one that doesn't get registered. Had he already been within the squad, Barcelona could have decided, OK, well, it's Samuel Umtiti that we don't register, or it's Jordi Alba that we don't register, or whoever it may be. But it was a perfect storm of circumstances, basically a situation driven by the previous board, and one that was completely unsustainable. And even this isn't the solution, but it's a step towards it.
The most perfect of all circumstances for PSG, though, Jules, is looking more and more likely 24 hours later, as if we didn't already think this, that it will be PSG where Messi plays his football next.
That's right, Kay. We had more information today on the moves of the Messi family's lawyers, for example, arriving in France, the little details, the commissions, the image rights, all of those details that were still being sorted out, really, by the two camps. We know that PSG had been working for a while now on a offer, on a contract for Messi, in case the day where he would leave Barcelona would happen, then they would be ready. That's why also I think all the negotiations and all the discussions have gone quite quick, in fairness, because this is a huge contract, because it's Leo Messi, and yet they found some sort of agreement pretty quickly, because I think PSG had been doing a lot of work already, like we've been reporting on the show. What I find quite incredible is that if you go back to that summer 2017 when Neymar moved, when PSG paid that release clause, that €222 million release clause, it was Neymar Senior who called Nasser Al-Khelaifi, the PSG chairman, the PSG president, and said, okay, Neymar wants to leave Barcelona, he wants to come to PSG. Of course, before that, they had already discussed that eventuality, but he was the call from Neymar's dad, and on Thursday night, it was Leo Messi's dad who picked his phone up and called Nasser Al-Khelaifi in a very, very similar phone call just 4 years on about, hey, my son is going to leave Barcelona, can he come to PSG? Is this possible? Can you make it happen? What kind of contract can you offer? What kind of money can you offer us? And since that day, since that moment, things have gone really quickly. But again, it's history repeating itself between Barcelona and some of their best players, and one of the greatest of all time, and then PSG as well, and I find that striking.
And almost 4 years to the day as well, Jules, that happened with Neymar. You're looking at this now with Messi, and so much talk about how that front three could look at PSG, and we'll get to that in just a moment. What have you made of those criticising if Messi is to go and take this move? Because you have to look at it. Does he have any other option of anywhere else to go right now other than PSG?
Well, not. We know that he wants to play in Europe to be competitive for the World Cup in Qatar in 16 months now. So I think that rules out, no offense to MLS or to the Argentinian League, for example. But that means no going back to Argentina to play there, or no going yet to MLS. So he would stay in Europe. In Europe, as we mentioned on the show last night, none of the English clubs right now, because they took different directions, United, City, Chelsea, are in for Messi right now. No Bayern Munich. In Italy, they're all broke. And in Spain, it's either Barca or Real Madrid. He's not going to go to Real Madrid, and Real Madrid probably can't pay those kind of wages anyway. So it's only PSG. They are the only club that he wants, okay. But they're also the only club able to offer him a contract like this, 40 million net a year for 2 years plus an extra one in option. There was no one else. So it was either he would find an agreement with PSG, or he would have to reduce even more his his wages demands, and maybe then other clubs could have been there and make some kind of offer, but I'm not even sure who, to be honest. So it was always going to be PSG, I think, from the moment that he would have decided to leave or been forced to leave Barcelona.
Just to let you know, the Madrid press have been all over it, as you can imagine, Jules, and they say that Messi coming to PSG means that Mbappe could actually be closer to Real Madrid than ever right now. Will we be seeing those three all playing together, Neymar, Mbappe and Messi? Is there a chance that Mbappe does leave with Messi coming in?
But why? Why would he leave? He's got the chance to play with Messi. Why would he leave now? He wanted to stay even before they decided to sign Messi, or they took a chance to sign Messi. So that doesn't change anything. Actually, it could be the other way around, and that's certainly what a few people at the club are hoping, is that this was always going to be his last season at the club and he would leave on a free next summer, very likely to go to Real Madrid and live with Sid and his family. Now that Messi is there for at least 2 years, there's a feeling that maybe Mbappe would want those 2 years in Paris with Messi, because, you know, everybody wants to play with Messi. This is his chance. He's still only 22 years old, so this is, he can play with Messi for 2 years, and after that he could still be on a free transfer if he just extends by 1 year's contract, which I think PSG would be very happy with, and then he would be going to Real Madrid on a free as well. So it's actually the other way around. This Messi deal doesn't push anyone out. The idea is very much that front three would be Neymar, Mbappe and Messi, and that have Di Maria somewhere there if you want to, but certainly not meaning that Mbappe would leave the club. No chance.
Oh wow, Sid, I heard you chuckling there. Why?
I was just chuckling at Jules trying to make me feel better by saying it's all right, you might have lost Messi, but you can have Mbappe and he can live in your house. I mean, he'll have to live in the garage.
Yeah, but, you've got extra room.
We can find a space for him there. I'm very interested as well in Jules's analysis of this, because you're absolutely right, Kay, that the assumption in Madrid is that this helps move Mbappe closer to Real Madrid, if not now, then in the year's time. I don't know, and Jules can hopefully explain this to us, the economic mechanics of this, and whether the money spent on Messi makes it harder to offer Mbappe the kind of deal that would make him stay. But from a purely footballing point of view, I completely agree. You know, this is a year to try it out with Messi. And if he enjoys it, and if he thinks, wow, this is really, really good, then the temptation, surely, from Mbappe's point of view, would be to say, all right, I know that I am, 11 years younger than Messi. I know that there's probably only one more year left of Messi, or maybe two more years left of Messi at the top of his career. But if he really enjoys this season, maybe he will think, actually, you know what? I'll sign a two-year deal, I'll have two more years of Messi, and then I'll go to Real Madrid, at which point, by the way, he would still only be, correct me if I'm wrong, 25, with a huge amount of his career ahead of him still.
As a rate of reply to that as well then, Jules, with the financial situation, everything would be okay with Messi coming in there at PSG?
That's what they're saying. I mean, as you know, I've always been very sceptical on the feasibility of them three together on those wages. I mean, the wage bill, we talked about the wage bill in Barcelona being 110% of their revenue, so way, way too high. If you pay Messi 40 million net a year, Neymar is on 35 or 36 actually million net a year, and Mbappe currently only on 20, but the extension on the table is to be at 35 as well. They will have to find more revenues, and they're certainly hoping that with Messi arriving, sponsors will queue at the door of the Parc des Princes to come and join the club, which I believe. I don't know how much revenue you can actually get in the space of a few months and a couple of years, but certainly you know that Messi will attract more revenues, more income, more sponsorship deal, more marketing deal, all of that. Of course he does. He on himself represented 30% of all of Barcelona's revenue, so he's not going to bring 30% straight away extra revenue to PSG, but you know that sponsor deal will arrive and will happen, new ones. So but yeah, I said I'm also, I don't know how they will do this. I don't know where the money is going to come from or how, but they keep telling me that it's doable, so I have to believe them.
Yeah, it does seem to be a year, obviously, where there are more allowances made with financial fair play. And that, Sid, brings me back to La Liga. Is this it? Is it totally final? Or is there something that La Liga could do, maybe some leeway, because they're not being as flexible with their own financial fair play rules?
Well, look, this is part of the reason why we've been in this situation for the last couple of months, and Laporta was very clear the other day in terms of the mechanics of this and saying that we made two offers to Messi and both times we went to La Liga and both times we thought that there was a chance that this would fit within financial fair play. And he even said at times we thought that there might be some flexibility. We also know that La Liga was under pressure from other clubs who didn't want an exception to be made for Messi, who didn't want the rules to be loosened at all, because the rules are there. And we knew that. And to be fair to Laporta, while it is true that he pointed the finger at La Liga a little bit in terms of saying, you know, this doesn't happen essentially because the league won't allow us to, he didn't really blame them. He did say, we knew these factors, we knew these conditions, we knew these rules, we knew what the situation was, and it is our situation. That 110% just cannot happen. And you can't register a player, and that is our fault. And we tried to move others out, but that wasn't so easy. We tried to sort this situation out sooner, and that wasn't easy. And so I don't think we expect any flexibility now. At first, I must confess that when the original statement was made by Barcelona, it was kind of blunt and it was short. And it felt to me like an attempt to try and put the pressure on La Liga to say, you know, this really could happen. You really could lose your best player. Because it's not just Barcelona's best player. It's La Liga's best player. If you allow this to happen, this will be it. He really will go. But by the time Laporta spoke the next day, and I thought spoke really quite honestly, there were one or two elements that weren't dealt with, and I think he probably should have done, but fundamentally quite clear. I don't think there was any hope from there. You know, he left that little glimmer of hope in there when there was a couple of questions along the lines of, you know, is there no way back? Could this not be fixed? What if Messi took a salary that was purely symbolic, effectively played for free? Could that be fixing it? And he said, well, look, we have to live in the real world. I don't want to generate false hopes. I don't want us to go into these hypothetical situations, because we know the reality of this, and the reality of this is this financial problem that we've got. And I think it's worth pointing this out, Kay, not least because you've focused this off the back of talking about whether PSG can do this with financial fair play. Barcelona couldn't. And I think sometimes we talk a lot, don't we, about how, well, financial fair play, everyone just ignores it. It doesn't really matter. It's not taken very seriously. Here is a league. Now, obviously, we can argue about whether this is right or wrong. But here is a league that has applied financial controls to the ultimate consequence, to the biggest consequence you could ever imagine for that league, which is the greatest player that that league has ever had, the greatest player possibly that football has ever had, is leaving. Because that league has said, no, our financial controls do not move. And also, by the way, of course, as we know, those are financial controls that are put in place in advance. They're not a punishment later on. It's not like they say, okay, Barcelona, do what you want, but if you break the rules, maybe in a year's time we'll punish you, we'll put a fine on, maybe we'll kick you out of the competition for a year. No, it's, we do it now, and if you don't get under that limit that we set, because it's the league that sets it, not the club, you simply cannot register this player. Now, even within this, of course, had Barcelona renewed Messi earlier while he was still part of the club, he needn't have been the player forced out. But because he's the last one in, and because he comes as a free agent, he is the one that doesn't get registered. Also, of course, because he's the one whose salary can make the biggest impact into that budgetary situation that they're in. But yeah, I think I don't want to celebrate this. I absolutely don't want to celebrate Messi going. But I think it is worth pausing a moment to think about the fact that these are financial controls taken so seriously that La Liga lost its best player.
And it is definitely worth mentioning. And you did mention there, Sid, and I just want to lay it down, because there has been a romantic view of, if Messi were to stay on, which of course he shouldn't do at all, but if he were to stay on for free in this hypothetical world, it still doesn't mean he could be registered right now anyway because of the situation they're in, right?
Now, look, first things first, my hand's up. You talk about it as a romantic vision. I would love it. I really would love it. Yeah, if Messi turned around and said, listen, I'll play for free. Give me the minimum wage. I'll play for free. Maybe we do some sort of deal over shirts or whatever. I mean, all these things are complex. First things first. No, he shouldn't do that. No, he has no obligation to do that. No, the club has no right to expect him to do that, nor do the fans have any right to expect him to do that. In fact, I think it's quite clear that most of the fans would defend his right to get all the money he can out of Barcelona, given everything that he's contributed over the years, given the perception that he's been treated badly over the last year or 2 years, which is absolutely true. Of course he shouldn't do this, but yeah, of course deep down there's a bit of us that thinks romantically, wow, wouldn't it be wonderful if this happened? Now, wouldn't it be fantastic if Messi said, look, I know there's no way back unless I do this. And by the way, if he does this, maybe it encourages some of the other players, maybe it puts leverage and pressure on some of those other players who've refused to back down, some of those players who've refused to move on. And we'll come to them in a minute, by the way, because I think it's really worth pointing out a situation that those players are in. And maybe this could happen. But Realistically, it's not going to. Realistically, we shouldn't ask him to. And realistically, it can't. But there's also another key point, which is, as we just talked about, 110% of their income goes on salaries. Even if Messi goes, as it looks like he's now about to do, that would be down to 95%. It's still too high. Even Lionel Messi's departure isn't the solution here. So even if he did it, Barcelona might still go, we still can't register you until some other players go, and those other players aren't going. So some of these new signings may well be left in limbo. They may well not be able to be registered either. And so the situation is really, really difficult. But even if Messi did this thing, and let me repeat this, I would love it if he did, much as I know that it's realistically just can't happen. Even if he did it, they still might not have a way out of this. Now, very briefly, just let me make that point about the players who are left. Given that Messi has basically had to go because of this, and all the lots and lots of other players who haven't wanted to move on, who are high wage earners and so on, are still at the club, the pressure they are under now, the sense of rejection from some fans that they are under now, I think is enormous. I think the way that they go into the season, the situation they find themselves in, players like Samuel Umtiti, Sergio Roberto, Philippe Coutinho, Antoine Griezmann, those kind of players are under huge pressure for next year now.
Yeah, and obviously someone's going to have to step up and be a leader with everything that's going on. It's going to be a very interesting year for Barcelona if this all does go through as what we are seeing. Jules, reports that Sergio Aguero is looking at his options now, because obviously he went to Barcelona hoping to play with one of his best friends in Lionel Messi, and now that's not going to happen. Do you think he's within his rights to question this?
Well, I don't think he's registered either. I think, like Sid just said, all the new signings, Memphis Depay and Eric Garcia and Sergio Aguero, right now, because of the wage bill being, again, too high, even with Messi leaving, I don't know what his future holds anyway. He might not be able to play, and Barcelona might have to only be able to field players who were already on their books last season. And again, not all of them will be able to be registered because, again, the wage bill will be too high, even if you don't count the new signings. So it's an absolute mess, a mess that we're not going to go back to what Sid explained before, but they should, that a club like Barcelona should never be in. This is one of the greatest clubs in the world. This is one of the richest clubs in the world in terms of revenue coming in. And it's just an absolute disgrace that they're in this situation where we're not even sure that Memphis Depay and Sergio Aguero, if they wanted to be there and play, will be allowed to do that. So if Aguero wants to go out, maybe even the club would welcome it and said, you know what, we can't even afford you anyway, so may as well free you, and you are free agent again, and you can go wherever you want. Because I could also understand his point of view, where he thought he was coming to play with Messi, and now he's not even sure himself that he'd be able to play for Barcelona full stop.
Wow. So Sid, with all this going on, is it just a waiting game now to see who else they can get out the door until the transfer window's closed?
Exactly. And it has been, by the way, all the way through the summer. And Laporta was quite interesting on this the other day. He used the phrase, I think in life it's not good to prolong the agony. You know, they knew this moment was coming, but of course they were working against the clock, trying to get players out, trying to get Griezmann and Coutinho in particular to go, because they were players who still had amortization payments to be made. They were players, of course, who are high salary earners as well. Obviously Dembélé is another one, but because he's injured, it's very difficult to make any kind of movement with him. And so this was already the case. And so when you look at it, and the other day you kind of stuck in a position where you think, oh, you know, couldn't there be a solution? What if you managed to get a sale for argument's sake? It doesn't matter that it's Griezmann, but Griezmann. Or what if you get a sale for Coutinho? Could this not fix things? Well, first of all, the financial situation is so bad that you'd need more than one. And secondly, of course, that's what they've been trying to do for the last 2 months, and not being able to. But now, having got rid of Messi, who, as I say, financially, is the most important one to get rid of. In footballing terms and emotional terms, absolutely not. But in financial terms, he's the most important one to get rid of. But others still have to go. So that's exactly as you say, Kate. They now have until the 31st of August, which is the end of the transfer window, to try and move these players on. And in the meantime, the new players who are not yet registered, they're stuck in limbo, waiting to see what the future holds for them.
And if those new players are registered, just for argument's sake, because a lot of the ones that you're looking to maybe go out are ones who haven't been playing as much, not Antoine Griezmann, but some of the others. If that happens, are Barcelona still among the favourites to win La Liga this year without Lionel Messi?
It's very difficult to give you an answer on that for two fundamental reasons. The first one is that, of course, players have to go. So first things first, we'd have to see which players it is. You know, which players eventually go. For example, if they could get a fee and reduce the salary for someone like Samuel Umtiti, we know that it wouldn't make a huge impact on the squad because he hasn't played very much. He was brilliant in his first season at Barcelona, but hasn't been since. We know that if Coutinho went, in truth, and again, I say this with the greatest respect to these players, it wouldn't have a huge impact on the way that they played. And yes, this could still be a very, very good team. The second reason why it's quite difficult to answer this, and I don't want this to sound maudlin or like I'm shedding a tear for Messi, it's very difficult to imagine a Barcelona team without Messi, and in particular, imagine a competitive Barcelona team. Because I can't stress this enough, Messi has been by far and away the best player for over a decade, year after year after year. He is a player that you look at and you think, well, even if the rest of the team isn't functioning particularly well, and for a long time, of course, the rest of the team has functioned brilliantly as well. You know, it's not just been Messi, but his level has been so high that it kind of eclipses everything else. So it's very difficult to properly kind of conceptualize or imagine what this team will look like without Messi. Now, I think there are enough really good players there that this could potentially be a good team. But as I've already said, I think those players that remain are under huge pressure. I think some of them will feel liberated, by the way. I think without Messi, I think Griezmann certainly positionally may well feel liberated in terms of his sense of self-importance within the team and so on. And there are good footballers at Barcelona. But right now, it's really hard to conceive of this team without Messi because, of course, we've spent 15 years watching him. We spent 15 years him being the heart of everything that they do. Even in the great Barcelona teams, when you had a brilliant Eto'o or a brilliant Henri, or where you had even Ronaldinho at the very start, he still ended up looking at Messi. And so it's so hard to judge what will happen next. The one thing we know, I think, is that we're going to miss him.
Yeah, absolutely, although Jules is not going to miss him, but it's interesting that Sid says that because how
Jules
often,
isn't.
You know, a word like Messi dependencia should probably be in the dictionary now, so heavily he was relied on. Anyway, you can keep up to date with all the latest twists and turns with this Messi saga. It does look as though it's going to be PSG, and it's just a matter of days now, but make sure you do visit our website, ESPN.com, for all the latest transfer talk. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
PSG getting their league season underway against the newly promoted Troyes, who actually went ahead first in this game. El Hadjam with a headed goal here to make it 1-0. Obliged the Parisians to have to come back, and come back they did. And what a way to introduce yourself. Achraf Hakimi hit that one out. Wonderful stuff. Welcome to Paris, Achraf Hakimi. That made it 1-1, and it wasn't too long until PSG went ahead. There was talk of whether Mbappe would start, a high percentage. It was said that he would. He did. He set up. Mauro Icardi for this goal, another lovely one. PSG coming from behind to take all 3 points in their first league game of the season. And Mbappe taking some of the headlines with a good performance in this game. Julien Laurent was watching it, of course, and will be happy with that result. It could be the start of a wonderful week for Paris, Jules. How did Paris look in this game?
There were some good things, Kay. Some others not so good. They struggled a bit towards the end. I think physically they were a bit tired. We know that they worked really hard with Pochettino, sometimes three daily training sessions to get fit for the start of the season, which is what Poch does. So I think towards the end they struggled a bit physically. A lot of the big players, you said Mbappe started, but no Neymar, no Verratti, no Marquinhos, no Di Maria, and the list goes on. But we saw Gini Wijnaldum playing in unlikely positions, out wide in a four in midfield with Mbappe and Icardi on their own up front in the front two. So some positives, some negatives as well. The press worked well at times. Others, they lost a lot of balls too. Kylian Mbappe, you said, created the goal for Icardi, had some good moments, but also at times was not really good in his decision making with the ball. So a lot of things to work on, but at least it's a win to start. We saw Monaco dropping points at home. We saw Lyon dropping points at home so far this weekend. So I think Poch and PSG and the players will be happy with that.
So just a bit of early season rustiness, is that all it is, Jules?
Yeah, I think that's right. That's the right word, Kay. Rustiness, a bit of tiredness as well, especially towards the end. They got caught early with that goal on the set pieces, which then meant Troyes, whose game plan was very much a line of five and a line of four. Although they played some good football, they were by far the most entertaining team in the French second division last season. They play really good. They've got a really good young manager with bright ideas. So it was never going to be easy for PSG, but even less when you one goal down after 9 minutes and they can just defend as deep as they want, which they did. And at times I think PSG had to find a way of creating spaces and creating chances. And Hakimi, who we saw scoring that goal, was really key because he brings so much to that team. And we saw it already in the French Community Shield that PSG lost against Lille, where he was PSG's best player. And I think again tonight we saw how much he will bring to this team through the season.
Yeah, what a brilliant start for him. And you did say it wasn't all perfect for PSG. Keylor Navas called upon a few times in this game. What's going to happen going forward here, Jules? He's obviously started this game. What's going to happen between him now that Donnarumma's there?
It will be interesting to follow. We don't know yet. We were told at ESPN a couple of weeks ago that Keylor Navas would remain the number one certainly now. And it's normal because Gigio Donnarumma has only just arrived in Paris on Friday, only started training. You need to be fit physically, but also in terms, you know, mentally and all settling in and things like this before he can even think about starting for the club. So I think Navas will have a good run of games now. We saw he was pretty much perfect tonight. He made the good saves when needed. There's nothing he can do on the goal, for example. So it'd be very interesting to see how Pochettino manages this situation with Donnarumma, who has an amazing Euros with Italy, who is full of confidence, has that momentum from the Euros from the summer. And Navas, who has more experience, who was fantastic last season for PSG, was really clutch in some of the Champions League matches too, a competition that Donnarumma has never played in, for example. So whether Poch will alternate one in the league, one in Europe or not, it'd be very interesting.
So just quickly, where we talk about Pochettino there, and obviously there's going to have to be some management done by him this season, particularly if Messi does come there. Is he seen as being able to handle the stars in this locker room?
Oh, I think so. There's no doubt. He already has spoken to Leo Messi on Friday at length over the phone. He's got the respect of players like Mbappe and Neymar, who are really fond of him, really like him. They've got a very strong relationship, especially Mbappe and Pochettino, who speaks really good French. So I've got no issues with the fact that he can manage ego. The thing is, finding the right formula, the right tactics, the right formation to make this team with Messi not just good, you know, good as a team, but also balance, and not just having three players attacking, Mbappe, Neymar, Messi, and the rest defending. Everybody will have to attack, everybody will have to defend. You can just imagine already a right-hand side with Hakimi and Messi, which hopefully for PSG fans can remind them of a Dani Alves and Leo Messi partnership, for example. So they will need a bit of adaptation and a bit of time to get used to the right tactics, but I'm sure Pochettino will be able to find the right way. And I mean, imagine the luxury that he has. For many years when he was at Spurs, he never had a player, even an extra player recruited during the summer, and now he will get Donnarumma, Sergio Ramos, Wijnaldum, Hakimi and Messi in the same summer, in the space of a month. month. It's just crazy.
Wow, and it's a lovely problem to have for Mauricio Pochettino. Jules, we'll be able to hear more from you as always on the Gab and Jules podcast. You've got Don Hutchison joining you this week because Gab is still on holiday in his Alpine retreat.
Cuidado el remate, gol, golazo.
Just 6 days to go until La Liga kicks off, and we are continuing our countdown, bringing you up to date with every team that you'll be able to see on ESPN Plus. And today it's Sevilla who opened their campaign against Rayo Vallecano, and there is so much to talk about with a club like this. They finished fourth last season, and that's pretty much what helps them with their income for the club, is achieving regular Champions League qualification. But it's not the Champions League that you usually associate this club with. It is the Europa League. Rob Palmer joining me now, longtime commentator for La Liga, and so much to talk about with this team, Sevilla. One of the most passionate fan bases, Rob, in the whole of the league.
Absolutely. It's a wonderful club, wonderful city. Fourth place last year, fourth largest city in Spain. And it's a little bit different, you know, when you go there. When I first started covering La Liga, we had a week in Barcelona and Madrid, and you see Spain, and Madrid's a wonderful capital, and Barcelona is everything. And then you go down to the city of Seville, and you see the orange trees, the architecture, the river, the old town, the new town, the tapas bars, and it is pure Spain. This time of year, it's so hot, you really can't settle there. But it's a beautiful all-year-round city, and it's a wonderful football club as well. And of course, it's one of those rare cities that's got two teams in with Real Betis across town, and the two distinctively different clubs.
It really matters to them as well. And as you say, it's so hot. I actually was told by my Spanish friends before I went there, be careful, because if you've got cheap shoes on, they might actually melt on the pavements. It's that hot. But so rich in culture, as you were mentioning, just a wonderful city. If you do have one weekend to go and see a game in Spain, I always say pick either Sevilla or Betis so that you do get the chance to go to Seville and to see everything there. As you said, flamenco, just everything that comes with it. But let's get to the team, shall we? Julen Lopetegui seems to have found a much better home for himself here, doesn't he?
He has. He did such a good job with the Spanish under-21s. And, of course, then he had that absolute nightmare with the national team. He was doing so well with the national team. Then he went to Real Madrid. And he's found himself a home. It's more than the manager there. I'm sure we're going to talk about Monchi, the director of football. But what happens at the club is they choose a good coach. They put the coach in place, and then they provide him with the ingredients to make the omelette or the souffle or whatever. And Lopetegui has done well. He's got a great mix of players there. And every year they accept it in Seville, but they have to change the team. They bring players in, little diamonds, uncut diamonds. They give them a good shine, get two or three seasons out of them, and then they move them on for a profit, and then they find the next lot as well. And they're always up there. This year they're going to be contesting in the Champions League as well.
Yeah, and you do wonder if the Champions League is the right fit for them with everything that we've seen historically with Europa League and just how much they've made that competition theirs. But you mentioned Monchi, a sporting director, and yes, clubs do have sporting directors, but he feels so intrinsically linked with this club. And as you mentioned, finding what you could say were relatively unknown players that he finds, being able to bring them to the club where they have their platform. We've seen superstars come out of there. Perhaps none more so than his proudest achievement, Dani Alves.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy that was the backup goalkeeper, never really made it as a player, went into the technical department, and, you know, we've all seen the film Moneyball. Well, he kind of brought that to Spain, and he's had Dani Alves playing today in the Olympics. He's had so many players. Rakitic came in, Sergio Ramos, I think, was under his tenure as well. There's probably a superstar every 4 or 5 years that he brings through. Reyes, another one. I could sit here all night. We could reel him off. Go under. They're about to sell. Roma thought they could take him away. He went over to Serie A for a little while, and he has lasted 2 years over there, and he's back home now. But he has this wonderful method. He's got 700 scouts around the world, keeping an eye on all of the leagues in South America. He's got people everywhere, literally everywhere. They bring the players in, they take a risk on them, and he makes a profit. I think they've made about $200 million profit on the players that he's brought in the last decade. And there are very few clubs in the world where the biggest star at the club is the sporting director. He probably is unique. It's probably the only club where they've got the big star, the most famous man at the club, is the sporting director.
Yeah, it's wonderful to see. And you mentioned, obviously, we talked about the passion. They've got this amazing anthem as well. If you get a chance to go and hear their Centenario anthem, you hear the fans all singing it in the stands before kickoff, and you'll get goosebumps if you're there in the stadium. And I'm sure everybody would agree with that. But how are you thinking for them this season, Rob? It's always a brilliant team to see, especially up against the big teams. Well, it's one of the big teams, but the bigger teams ahead of them, particularly in the table last year in Atleti, Barca and Real Madrid. You usually know that Sevilla will give them a bit of a game, and that's because they usually do have strong and good players in their ranks.
Yeah, it's always a little bit of a stretch for them, isn't it? There is a league for the fourth biggest kind of club in any country, and they always prove to be, as you said before, these are the seven times they've won, half a dozen times they've won the UEFA Cup or the Europa League, as it is these days. And you put them in a group of teams of that kind of stature, and they're as good as anybody in Europe. This year they've got to play in the Champions League, so they've got to probably going to get a bit of a bruising against some of the teams, some of the major European teams. But do you know what? In La Liga, there's a very big chance for them, because we all know what's going on at Barcelona. They're in disarray. Real Madrid going to need to go through a bit of a rebuild. Atletico Madrid, for me, I think I've said it on this programme before, are probably the favourites next season. And Sevilla have a settled team. They've got a very good coach, and they've got a lot of good players, and they've been refreshing again in the summer, and they're not losing too many superstars. And I think they brought in Eric Lamela this week from Tottenham Hotspur, another player with a point to prove, another one of those. And they specialise in these players that maybe have... We know are good players, we know have got a reputation, they've been at a club, failed a little bit, and then they bring them back in, and then they take them back to the level that they've been at before.
Thanks so much to Rob Palmer for his insight there on Sevilla. Luis Garcia will be back with us tomorrow as we continue the countdown to kickoff in La Liga. In the Olympic final gold medal match in men's soccer, it was Spain against Brazil. And for the second time in a row, Brazil are the men's football champions, the second nation after Argentina to win back-to-back Olympic gold medals. It ended up going into extra time after Oyarzabal replied to Cunha's goal. And then it was Malcolm who put the finish on a great ball to give the gold to Brazil. Nadim and Rob back with us. Nadim keeping a close eye on this game today. Deserved winners, Brazil, Nadim?
Yeah, I'd say so. I think although Spain have a lot of possession, ultimately Brazil, to me, just felt a bit more dangerous. And as you see, they've won it 5 years ago. And in that final, I thought they looked very, very comfortable. I think the Spanish players, you know, they did themselves credit, but... You know, for a team like Brazil, when you've got someone like Dani Alves on there as well, who's basically won absolutely everything, they look very, very comfortable on that stage. And I suppose I would say, yeah, they were deserved winners.
Yeah, the 44th title of what's been a storied career for Dani Alves. What an absolute legend, Rob. Obviously, this is a player that you've commentated on many a time over the years, but he really has left quite the legacy in football, hasn't he?
Absolutely. They weren't carrying him today either, was it, were they? He was playing his part. Great leadership. If you get a young Brazilian player, all you need to do is look around at this guy who's still trying to win things. He's, you know, in the 40s when it comes to titles. He's won at club level, he's won at international level. He's still got that desire. And when you're allowed an overage player like that, there's probably no better man to have around. And it was a wonderful performance by Brazil. And, you know, some countries maybe don't take the Olympics too seriously, but in Brazil, believe me, they're going to be partying tonight as they reclaim that title. And they really put a great deal of emphasis on this. And the players that maybe in 2 or 3 years' time are going to be regulars in the Brazilian national team, game in, game out.
Dani Alves, Nadim's got to be one of the best fullbacks of this generation, surely.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think when you name the fact that he had 44 titles, like, that's obscene. You know, you've got plenty of clubs who we deem as successful, who will never win that much. So for him to have done it as an individual, obviously he's needed to have been in the right places at the right times, but he's always contributed. And it's no sort of surprise then that he gets to a final, he goes out and wins it. And I think that's probably the only thing which he hadn't won thus far in his career. But his career is special. You know, from my sort of generation, you remember Cafus and so on. It was Cafu, Roberto Carlos. But then straight after that, in my eyes, was Dani Alves. And he's legendary. He's iconic. I think he's one of the most special players that I've seen in my lifetime. And it's funny to give someone so much praise, especially playing a position which is ultimately quite unpopular. But he's an incredible right back. And, you know, it's the type of person who you would have loved to have played with.
Yeah, and let's just talk a little bit about Spain, if we can, because obviously Spain have not really looked too sparkling throughout the whole Olympics, and it's understandable with some of the minutes in the legs of some of those young players, six of them, who played in the Euros as well. Just while we're on this, Nadim, how did Pedri look in the final for you? Because at 18 years old, this is a player who's now played 73 games since the start of the 2021 season. Now, it has to be said that he's been asked about this. People have been worried about him. He said it's an honour to play for his country, and he's OK doing so. But that's a lot of games for a young star that's still only a teenager.
Yeah, 100%. I think we can try and look at sort of performances in isolation, but you can't help but wonder about those 73 games that he's played throughout the entire season. I don't think today was essentially his best game, but he did his part for Spain. And I think on the day, it just wasn't going to be enough. And to be honest, my thing about watching the Olympics this year was that after having the highs of watching players like him perform in the Euros with an audience there, and you have that sort of emotional edge, I'm sure for some of those players it would have felt extra long because now they were playing those games. Although it was for a gold medal, they were playing those games without having a crowd there. And just finding that little bit extra at key moments probably is just that little bit more difficult. And I'm sure he's very, very disappointed. But then what a way to start your career, because you've ended up playing 73 games for a club like Barcelona and for a country like Spain. And he's coming out on the other side with all the praise and all the accolades that are possible. So, you know, as I say, credit to him. But that is a long, old season.
Yeah, and a talent like this needs nurturing, doesn't it, Rob? Obviously, with all those games already at such a young age and with everything that's going on at Barcelona. And now with Lionel Messi leaving Barcelona and obviously these shock circumstances that stunned the football world, there will be a lot of eyes on Pedri this season. They're going to have to give him something of a break, aren't they?
There was one little camera image of him towards the end of the game where he looked absolutely exhausted. It looked like he'd run the marathon in lead boots, never mind played an Olympic football final. 73 games, he started the season as an unknown. He got into the Barcelona team, he established himself there, then he got into the Spanish national team. He's probably the outstanding player when it came to the Euros. And then he's taken to the Olympics and he's carrying the torch for Spain there as well. And then when he goes home next week, he's going to learn that they're going to be leaning on him a little bit more because Lionel Messi, sadly, is no more at Barcelona. But they need to give the guy a break. We've had so many great young players over the years, and then they can get burnout when they're 22, 23. So Barcelona, they have to be wary of overusing him, over relying on him. They have to protect him. They have to nurture. Maybe a little bit like Manchester City today did with Jack Grealish, and they've done with Foden. Maybe if Pep Guardiola was there, he maybe have a better chance of succeeding. So Barcelona in a bit of a desperate situation at the moment, and I think we probably need to see him about the third or fourth game of the season, or give him 10 minutes at the end of matches. But let that lad go back to the Canary Islands where he's from and have a couple of weeks in his dad's restaurant where he was still, I think, serving on the tables last summer.
Wow. I actually do have another question for you, Rob, but because you mentioned Foden, I just want to put that to you, Nadim. Pep Guardiola was very careful with how he nurtured Phil Foden. Do you think he went about it the right way, and is that a way that maybe Barcelona can look at when it comes to a player with the talent that Pedri has?
Yeah, possibly. But I think one of the things with Foden was that one of the biggest roadblocks which he had at the start of his career was one guy by the name of David Silva. And ultimately, you know, you're not going to guarantee, for as good as Phil Foden was, that he was going to be playing ahead of David Silva and the team would essentially be stronger. I think in time, Pep was almost trying to make sure that he remained patient and understood the situation. But lo and behold, I think last season, as soon as David Silva wasn't there, you saw Phil Foden getting a ton more games. Whereas I think the situation for Pedri is maybe a little bit different. Like, he feels to me like he's the best player in that position for Barcelona. So if you do maybe rotate him out, who are you rotating him out for? You know, there's going to be pressure to play your best players at a club like Barcelona. So for the Foden effect, you know, as I say, it was a bit different because people could be patient because you had David Silva. But yeah, I don't know. The two cases, they feel a little bit different, but this type of talent is absolutely incredible. And hopefully, as Rob was alluding to there, they don't get to a point where he does feel burnout, because I think it would be ultimately it would be a huge shame because he is so talented.
Speaking of that incredible talent then, Lionel Messi, Rob, the whole time that you've been calling La Liga, he's been in the league playing every week pretty much for Barcelona, unless he's been injured or needed to rest. And now we have the news that he'll no longer be staying at Barcelona and no longer be in La Liga. How strange is it going to be for you to be calling games without Lionel Messi playing in this league anymore?
It's going to be very, very sad. But, you know, all great eras come to an end. I'm sure they had it with Babe Ruth and Gretzky over there. And, you know, all of these legends of the game. The thing about Lionel Messi is that he's gone out right at the top of his game. He did have a vintage season. It was a great season for Barcelona last season, but Messi was as good as he's ever been. If they had signed him to a five-year contract, his career was only going to go one way, wasn't it? Maybe now he heads over to Paris Saint-Germain and it becomes a bit of a circus act over there in the league with the players that he's going to be playing alongside. But maybe when the dust settles and we look back at it, he has gone out at the peak, as Iniesta did, as Xavi did, as Piqué probably will at the end of this season as well, as Puyol did at Barcelona as well, as Zubizarreta, the goalkeeper, did as well. So maybe when we reflect it and we read the history books, we'll see that maybe the time was right. Though he doesn't feel it at the moment, not having Messi out there and seeing this kind of mosquito-like figure buzzing around the Nou Camp, creating havoc for the opposition. But Barcelona have got Ansu Fati to come through. They've got Pedri to come through. Maybe they can make some use of Coutinho as well. They've got Griezmann there, and suddenly Griezmann can grab the microphone and he can start singing some songs and be sent to stage. So maybe upon reflection, this is the next era and the Messi era is over, if that's what we are to be believing when there's his press conference on Sunday morning.
Yeah, and obviously we'll wait for that press conference, but no doubt you, Rob Palmer, will have some stories to tell when you're an old man in your rocking chair. Anyway, that does it for that. Make sure that you check out our YouTube page, subscribe to it, ESPN FC, for all the latest stories and bonus content over online. Thanks so much for joining us today. Make sure to stay with us if you'd like to hear more from Nadim and Shaka. They'll be with me for extra time. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Kay, Nadim and Shaka. And it's the first time the three of us have all been on together since the disrespect from Nadim when he said that Shaka was old enough to be his dad. Nadim, would you like to apologise?
No, because it's true. It literally is true. Why do I need to be sorry for facts? It's true.
We're both in our 40s.
It's true.
Yeah, not
we're
true.
We're both in our 40s, Kay.
The disrespect, Chuck,
yeah,
and the disrespect.
I'm not sure about that.
All right, frankly,
unbelievable, Kay. Unbelievable.
Shocking. Shaka, does Zach Steffen need to leave Man City in order to seek regular game time? Is he good enough to play at the highest level?
The answer to that is yes. And after I thought he was outstanding today in the Community Shield, I understood the move to Manchester City, but a couple of years in, a couple of very good performances in, I think he needs to start looking for regular first team football again. That's the best way to improve your game. And I think Zach Steffen should do that.
Next off, Dan the Orange Man says, and I'll come to you first, Nadim, how would you feel if you were in James Rodriguez or Sergio Aguero's shoes with both Ancelotti and Messi, who were the main reasons for these players joining their respective clubs leaving this summer?
Well, you know, we can say they're the main reasons, but with James Rodriguez, he's playing in the Premier League, and with Sergio Aguero, he's playing for Barcelona. So ultimately, you know, it's a soft little cushion to say, oh, I'm disappointed that, you know, this has happened, but I think these players will be okay. I think Sergio will be okay playing for Barcelona with maybe Depay and Griezmann around him. I think he'll be okay, but with the James Rodriguez one, that is, you'd argue that's the more interesting piece of it, but he's somebody who's so talented. I'm sure if he doesn't want to be there, the option will come and he'll end up somewhere else. So we'll just have to keep an eye on those two.
Is this the footballing definition, Shaka, of first world pains?
Oh, without question it is. Without any kind of question. James Rodriguez, the out-and-out star at Everton in the Premier League, playing for a manager. Okay, it's not the manager who signed him, but playing for a manager who's incredibly accomplished in Rafa Benitez. And Kun Aguero, listen, I'm a little bit more sympathetic with Kun Aguero, who goes, it felt like with the intention of at least playing some club football with Lionel Messi, rejoining or joining his old friend at club level, where, you know, they shared such a friendship off the park, partnership on it with Argentina, and now all of a sudden that rug's been pulled out from under his feet. But as Nidham says, you know, listen, if you're going to be stranded somewhere, what better place to be to play a football?
Nadim?
I was just going to say, the one thing that would concern me is if Aguero and Messi are really good friends, and Messi told him to come but didn't tell him he was going to leave. So that would be somewhat of a concern. So I'm going to guess that Sergio maybe knew he was going to go.
Well, we'll see. With all the reports that maybe he's not too happy, we'll follow that one closely here, as you know. Nadim, Norilai says, should Man City sign Harry Kane now or go for Erling Haaland next summer?
I'll be honest, for me as a City guy, it's still very, very weird to be talking about players that cost this amount of money who are this talented. Because I remember from way back in the day, you know, there were times when they throw me up front, and that's, you know, look how much things have changed. So I think you can't disregard this season here, and you never know what's going to happen in this next year with Haaland and who's going to be interested and so on. And I think in Harry Kane, even though he's a little bit older than Haaland, I think he's still got a ton of years ahead of him where he can be really, really successful. So I would like them to be pursuing a player like him in this transfer window because, as I say, nothing's guaranteed for the next year. And who knows, by the end of next season, by the end of this season, City might have a different year, might be in a different moment. So I just say seize the day and see what you can find this time around.
Yeah, live in the moment. Andas asks Shaka, this week the NFL celebrated the new inductees into the NFL Hall of Fame and the former players got their gold jackets. Since the Premier League now does a Hall of Fame, do you think that they should adopt the gold jackets as well? Nadim and Shaka, how would you look in a gold jacket? I'll start with you, Shaka.
I'm not sure I can pull off a gold jacket, Kay. Though saying that, I can pull off most things. I've just never tried a gold jacket, I found.
What's the loudest thing you've ever worn, Shaka?
Oh God! Oh no! I don't wear loud things at all.
Goalies always wear loud things.
Well, goalie shirts—that's about it. But in terms of jackets, I am as middle of the road as they come.
All right, Shaka, that's you. Nadim, gold jacket.
Nadim likes loud clothes. Nadim.
No, Shaka, you know, the difference that we have here, I'm going to have to go with the opposite opinion purely because there's a generation between us, because you are old enough to be our father. So as a consequence, whatever you say, I'll say the opposite. So that's what I'm prepared to go with. And as far as like Premier League legends go, I'm sure for your generation, you'd be considered for that. But, you know, if by some miracle I'm in that consideration, it'll probably be in about 20 years or so. So I don't think it's right for me to answer the question now, but you know, I would love to see people like you wearing a gold jacket because you deserve it, Shaka, from your generation, from when the Premier League first started.
That sounds to me, Nadim, like you don't think you can pull the gold jacket off and you're just trying to shirk the question.
No, listen, I could rip it off.
Nadim had a gold jacket on last week Friday.
If I had it on.
Nadim was spotted out in Manchester in a gold jacket last Friday.
Well, were you speaking to your sources, Dad? Is that what was going on? Come on.
He was speaking to his sources.
I heard it through the grapevine.
No, via a landline, because that's that generation. All right.
I thought we were together this year.
We are. I'm sorry. I thought we had.
After I brought ice cream, goat cheese and red cherries, This is where we end up.
We'll be talking about that ice cream, don't you worry. Deathcrick says, Grealish to City, Lukaku to Chelsea. Should United be working on hijacking the Kane deal or breaking the bank for Haaland to keep pace? Are they and Liverpool going to get left behind this year, Shaka?
United had their business done very early in Jadon Sancho. They just did theirs so early that it feels like it's already forgotten. The bigger challenge is Liverpool, who, listen, we've spoken about Fenway Sports Group's reluctance to spend big and the pandemic and how it's affected their finances. Maybe the fitness of Van Dijk proves the boost that they need in terms of keeping pace with the others. But I think everybody's quite happy going into this season. As I said on the show, I still feel it's City and Chelsea are the favourites and second favourites. But if you're Liverpool, you're thinking we won with this exact side a couple of seasons ago, and Manchester United were sitting second for most of this season and have strengthened. So maybe they're quietly confident as well.
As a City man, Nadim, is there a fear that there could be some competition from Manchester United and Liverpool this year?
I wouldn't necessarily say call it a fear as such. I think for the teams who are up at the top trying to win things, I think all they can handle is the stuff that's in front of them. I think whatever other sides are doing, I don't think they'll be too reliant upon that. I think you start the year from top to bottom in the Premier League feeling confident you can achieve something, and until otherwise happens, you know, that's the spirit, that's the mentality. And I think as Shekhar was alluding to there, all the teams around City have had a nice boost, but City have had one as well. But the difference is, you know, they'll have a gold logo on their sleeve, whereas the other teams won't. And I think that will carry you just that little bit extra as well. So I don't think it's right to fear the opposition, because I think City do have the talent in play to be able to win any game against anybody. But it just shows again that, you know, they're going to have to be at their best and perform to their best if they want to find success, as we saw last year in the split in the season, in terms of how they were quite average in the first half of the season, but then you'd probably say exceptional in the second.
Collins Cheche asks Shaka, as the window stands, Grealish to City, Sancho to United and Lukaku to Chelsea, who has the bigger impact for their club?
Lukaku to Chelsea. That's easy. I mean, Chelsea needed that out-and-out number nine more so than United needed Sancho or City needed Grealish. I think easily that's the biggest of the difference makers in the three.
Nadim, Eddie asks, if you came out of retirement today and were given the choice of playing alongside Messi at Manchester City or representing England in the World Cup, which one would you choose?
Messi at Man City, I'll be honest with you. Well, for me, like, England playing for a national team, because I can also play for Nigeria, that needs to go out there. But the international football is terrific and all that stuff. England don't really have a true pedigree at sort of international level, barring, you know, one famous year in the 60s when Shaka went to the game and so on. But aside from that, there's not that really big history. But as far as players go, in someone like Lionel Messi, this is an iconic player. You know, when I played against him one time, and when he walked on this pitch, he was like, he wasn't a normal type of person. So to get the chance to play with somebody like that on a week-to-week basis, you know, the amount of stuff you could learn and the way you'd have to be at the very peak of your powers just to try and have the slightest chance if you were in training and so on. But yeah, that's what I would choose. And I know some people would disagree, but, you know, I love what Lionel Messi has brought to football because he's inspired so many people behind him.
Do you have a little pep in your step at training when there's a player? Well, obviously, you were talking about the best player in the world, but when there's a player of immense quality in a training session, are you, like, on the ball to try and impress them, Nadim?
No, just as a defender, you're just trying your best not to get humiliated by them. Like, there have been a few players like that when the coach is, like, naming the teams and you hear someone's name get called out and you're hoping that yours follows with it, because, you know, if it doesn't, like, there's carnage. Like, I was lucky enough to have played with, you know, some great at a point when not every player was great. It was when Robinho was there, and he was there alongside Alano. And if those two were on the same team, then you know that team had won, guaranteed, no matter what the game was. So you're always hoping that your name would follow that, and a lot of the time it wasn't, and I didn't get many wins whenever I was playing against those two players.
Nice to know that little tidbit, a little bit of insight there. Okay, for both of you, I'll start with you, Shaka. Nikosi Gold says, the last time Shaka and Nadim were in for extra time, they talked about their favourite desserts. Now, what about their favourite breakfast cereals? And UK, what's your favourite? All right, Shaka, favourite breakfast cereal.
My favorite breakfast cereal, I don't know. You know, the only thing I would go for more than most is granola. I like granola as a cereal. Does that count?
Yeah, it does, but I mean, it's a bit boring, isn't it, Shaka?
Right. I have granola as a cereal, and then after that, it just kind of depends what I'm in the mood for.
Nathan, what's your favourite cereal?
So I don't really eat cereal anymore, but when I was younger, I used to absolutely 2-foot attack Frosted Flakes. We're talking by the pound. Pour that into the biggest bowl possible, fill it up, and even slam it in the microwave a little bit, so it's just got a little bit of something to it. And yeah, it's kind of probably one of
those. No, you can't microwave cereal.
But it is what
it is. You're doing it wrong.
I can't hear you.
That's so wrong.
Sorry, I've tuned out. I can't hear you, Shaka. I can't hear you, Shaka. I've moved on.
I can't believe neither of you got the right answer.
Cereal in the microwave.
How are you going to microwave your cereal?
The right answer
is... You have to microwave the milk. Get it warm. You can't microwave the cereal.
It's to warm.
You can microwave ready bread and porridge.
I was going to say, in these days, I have overnight oats. I have overnight oats, and I like a tropical overnight oat with a bit of mango, papaya in there.
Oh, God.
That's nice. When I was a child.
I'm partial to an overnight oat.
Goodness me.
But neither of you got the right answer.
Back in my day. Let's get into this.
Back in my day, we used to just go out and run
overnight oats,
which we cut ourselves. Back in my day.
Shaka, I cannot believe the disrespect from start to finish.
Anybody who puts their cereal in the microwave, that's a jailable offence.
Okay. I'm just going to end it on saying that you both got the wrong answer, because the right answer is Cocoa Pops. I'm not too sure what they're called here in the United States, but basically once you finish them, you've got chocolate milk as well. So Cocoa Pops are chocolate Rice Krispies. I don't know what you guys call it here. That is the best.
Yeah, there's Cocoa Krispies.
That's it.
And what's the other one? And there's chocolate Frosted Flakes, or whatever it's called. Chocolate, whatever.
The Krispies. Correct.
Yeah. Well, I've got kids. We got all those things.
I think what we found out is all three of us don't eat cereal anymore, though, because we're boring and a bit older.
Exactly, yeah.
Anyway, yeah. Thanks so much for all your questions in this one. Always brilliant, especially the food ones. We love them the same way that Shaka and I love goat cheese and red cherry ice cream. Nadim, it is delicious. Do not knock it until you've tried it. And do not forget...
We have a cultured palate.
Yes, it's a cultured palate.
Not
a common one.
A young palate.
I love it. All right, yeah, that's it for the latest edition of Extra Time. Do not forget that ESPN FC is available 7 days a week.